Introducing a fresh new way to save with your Kroger points. Choose between saving on fuel or saving on your next Kroger delivery order with new rewards cash. You'll still earn points every time you shop Kroger delivery. Then when you're ready to redeem your points, you can choose to save up to $1 per gallon at the pump or redeem your points to save on your next delivery order. It's a fresh new way to save. Your points, your choice. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Not available in all locations. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Only the best run here at the Indianapolis 500.
Mario, who do you feel you'll have to beat in this year's race?
People like A.J. Foyt and Bobby Unser, for instance.
Stand by for the checkered flag.
Absolutely incredible. Danny Sullivan spun in front of Mario Andretti.
A.J. has done it. He has won his fourth Indianapolis 500.
Beyond the Bricks with jQuery and Mike Thompson. Brought to you by Quality Supply and Tool. Think outside the box. Store on 93.5 and 107.5, The Fan.
And we thank them for their sponsorship of Beyond the Bricks. On this night number two, getting you set for the Brickyard 400 as it returns to the Oval at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway this upcoming weekend. But good evening to you. My name is jQuery. Eddie Garrison helps put this show together. Mike Thompson is the other voice that you will hear, who is as knowledgeable about the history of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, the Indianapolis 500, and its video and audio archives as anybody that you will find. And I realize, folks, that we were not with you last night, but on Monday we began this week of shows by talking not necessarily so much at the outset of the week here about the Brickyard 400, but rather, as we say, the Indianapolis Motor Speedway and the personalities that have made it what it is in terms of the legendary venue within motorsport. And one of those personalities, one of the true greats of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway and the Indianapolis 500, Parnelli Jones, who we lost just a couple of months ago. And in that capacity, we talked about him on Monday evening. And now, Mike Thompson, the reality is this. Parnelli Jones' racing career goes beyond simply running in the Indianapolis and winning the Indianapolis 500. His footprint, his thumbprints, his fingerprints are in all areas of the sport of racing during the time in which he was alive and contributing to racing. And therefore, Mike, you had enough audio and we have enough content. We probably could do an entire month on Parnelli Jones, but we're going to do show number two still about the man, Rufus Parnelli Jones, that we recently lost.
Yeah, I mean, there's a guy we could definitely, you're right, do as many shows as we really wanted to about Parnelli. I mean, so many interesting facets to his career. We really haven't even touched on the fact, I mean, he was USAC stock car champion. And I mean, he had such a, I mean, drove jalopies, and that's how he was discovered by J.C. Agajanian. And you're right, though. I mean, such a varied and interesting career. And tonight, I think you're going to really find that we have some really interesting audio from another facet of his career, which was as a car owner.
Yeah, there were so many ways in which Parnelli, and I think, Mike, one of the things that truly is impressive about him, which we will hopefully shed light on tonight, is that oftentimes drivers, or really in any walk of life or sport, when you reach the summit, that can cause you to be a combination of arrogant or guarded and not necessarily sharing that wisdom or that skill set with others, that they also can utilize that to get to the top. But Parnelli Jones, by all account, as we're going to hear tonight, Mike, was not only a tremendous driver, but also a great owner because of the fact that he was an honest and a fair champion that allowed for the spotlight to shift to those that drove for him as opposed to keeping it all to himself.
Yeah, he was a great team manager and owner, and he hired the right people, as we'll hear later on. I mean, with his association with George McNaughty and Vel Miletich when they were together with, Vels Parnelli Jones Racing. But, I mean, you're right. I mean, he was there as kind of a front man because people were drawn to him. I mean, he was an Indianapolis 500 winner, so that helped. Sponsors were interested in being with him, but he wanted the spotlight to be on, when he became a team owner, to be on his drivers and his in his fine crew that he had with guys like George Bignotti. So, you know, Parnelli was a really multifaceted guy, but as you said, I mean, he became a different kind of guy after he got out of the car, out of driving championship cars, because, you know, he really took on a completely different role, and that was team owner. While he was still doing some other driving, he wasn't driving championship cars anymore, but he found a new avenue to, you know, keep involved in racing.
We concluded the show on Monday evening by talking about the fact that Parnelli nearly won the 1967 Indianapolis 500. That race, of course, would be won by A.J. Foyt. But he did not return again in 1968 to run the Indianapolis 500. In fact, he never drove another IndyCar race. In 1981, he joined Kevin Calabro. And yes, for those of you in the Indianapolis area that are newer to the area, that is the older brother of Dave Calabro, who now works on the public address at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. But Kevin Calabro on WIBC did a radio show called Sports Huddle. And in 1981, Parnelli Jones joined that program and talked about his decision to not return after the 1967 Indianapolis 500-mile race.
What happened to you in the 1968 race? Why did you not continue? That 67 was your last race.
Well, it's because when I seen the new Lotus cars, that was so much sleeker than the 67 car, much quicker. And of course, if you remember, Spence got killed here at Indianapolis during practice, and the cars looked very fragile, and they looked like they were very quick, and the suspension didn't look that strong to me, and I wasn't very impressed with them, and I felt that I was in a position then either to drive the old car, which I didn't think then would be competitive with the new one, and I was also didn't like the new one because I didn't think it was strong enough, and so I think it kind of helped me make my decision to not drive. And then of course once I made that decision, I never have turned back, and I've had opportunities to do that, but I just, you know, of course, then became a car owner and accepted that.
And Mike, that car owner opportunity for Parnelli Jones was more than just a guy deciding to tinker here and there. We're talking about a partnership that became one of the power teams in racing.
Yeah, I mean, he got together with a businessman, Vel Miletic, and they formed Vel's Parnelli Jones in the late 60s. And you know, Vel was a important part of that, and they were business partners, and they basically started with, you know, championship racing, and Parnelli actually bought the Lotuses that he was talking about. He bought them from Andy Granatelli at the end of the 68 season and was campaigning them at the end of the 68 season. And then, you know, it just kind of evolved from there. That was the beginning of Vel's Parnelli Jones. And then they started working on, you know, designing their own car and bringing on people to help do the, you know, design work and have their own design team and put out their own chassis.
And with that, they had the idea, the design, if you will, to have Al Unser run the Speedway in 1969. But a couple of things came into play there. One was Mother Nature, and the other was a motorcycle. All of it was talked about with Parnelli Jones and Sid Collins in one of Mike's rare clips that he comes up with, this one from the Speedway Radio Network.
One of the big stories here today has to do with Al Unser, a champion driver, driving for a winner of the 500, Parnelli Jones. Last night after closing time, he was driving a motorcycle with Parnelli. They were on separate bikes, I understand, but perhaps we can get more details from Parnelli himself. What happened to Al?
Well, actually, Sid, we were out for a little ride, a pleasure ride, and we were riding around the parking lot, and we went through one of the drainage ditches, and as we did, coming up out of the drainage ditch, Al's kind of picked the front wheel off the ground, and when he did, he kind of stepped off the bike, and he held onto the handlebars, and it kind of fell right back over on top of him, and fell right on his left leg, and the rear peg kind of stuck him right in the middle of the leg.
He got a compound fracture. He's in the hospital, I understand, and won't be driving for well over a month.
Yeah, it appears that way. I don't think the break is really, you know, real bad. However, it's going to keep him out of this particular race and probably out of racing for probably a month.
A couple of questions have come up today, Parnelli, and you're the man who can best answer them. Number one, is there any chance that you might get in the cockpit and drive your own car?
Well, Sid, the way I feel about that, I would kind of like to do that, but I have really been trying to cut down on my racing activity and not increase it, and I would have liked to have had a fair start. If I was going to, I would like to have had some practice up to this point, and which I haven't had, and to jump in the car cold turkey now, I don't feel would help my chances a great deal.
They talk a lot about racing luck, and you've had good and bad in your day. Right now, I'm sure you must feel as though you're riding on a kind of a bad streak to be this far into the month of May and lose your top driver.
Well, it's very disappointing. However, that's the way racing is, and you have to accept the bad with the good.
Well, what do you do now? You're trying to find one of the boys out here who perhaps wants to make a change, or will you reach outside for a drive?
Well, we're searching everywhere now for a good driver that we think that can win the race for us or do the best that is possible at this point. Where we get one, I don't know. We haven't decided on any one. We had Carl Williams in the car warming it up a bit ago, and that's about as far as we went so far.
Well, thank you, Parnelli, and good luck whomever you get. And I know I want to speak for our listeners and speaking to Al right now, who may be listening to this broadcast in the Methodist Hospital, and wish him well and hope he's up and around real soon.
Yeah, I do too, sir.
Been talking with Parnelli Jones, who lost his driver through a very freak motorcycle accident last evening.
Now, Mike, the first question for you to answer would be, which driver did they go with?
Bud Tingelstad ended up driving the car.
And, of course, Parnelli Jones we're talking about because Parnelli Jones we lost in June at the age of 90. Al Unser, who was the topic of discussion there, we lost in December of 2021. But the late Al Unser did sit down with Mike Thompson before that time, of course, and talked about the motorcycle accident. So here is Mike, who you hear on this program, and Al Unser talking about the subject with which we just heard Parnelli Jones discussing.
Yes, it was, yeah. We were in the garage area, and if you look up in the record books, it was that was the first weekend of qualifying, and it was raining. So it rained out Saturday for qualifying. So Parnelli, we're standing in the garage, and he says, let's take a ride on the bikes until the crowd gets out of here. You know, we'll just kill some time. I said, sure. We jumped on the motorcycles, and we were just riding around in the infield, you know, and not doing wheelies or anything like that. You know, I wasn't. And because I wasn't that good on a motorcycle, so I sure wasn't. And I went down in a bar ditch, kind of, I call them the little side road ditch, you know, for drainage of water. And when I came out, I was sitting too far back on the bike, and the bike did the wheelie, and I just kicked the bike loose. Well, the bike stopped in midair and fell over, and the kickstand went through my ankle, gave me a compound fracture. Well, that just, you know, Parnelli comes running over to me and he says, you okay? I says, I think I broke my ankle, my leg. He's, no, you didn't. No, you didn't. He says, you'll be all right. Well, we went to the hospital and it was a compound fracture.
You guys were tough back then. I mean, yeah, you're all right. Rub some dirt on it, right? You can get back in the car, right?
No, he put Ellie right away. He says, no, you didn't break it. You're okay. Come on, let's go. And I hobbled and got back on the bike, and we went into the infield hospital and went from there to Presbyterian downtown.
was not a good deal.
But eventually he would heal, maybe a little bit of dirt mixed in at Presbyterian. Al Unser recovered, and in 1970, he had a new Colt to drive and new sponsorship, one of the most iconic cars in the history of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway and the Indianapolis 500-mile race. Parnelli Jones explains how the famous Johnny Lightning sponsorship came about.
Well, we had went to a toy company for a sponsorship, and we were turned down by one company, and so this guy picked it up. He was pretty crude promoter, and scores, because I know when we won the first race, he already had tickets out that we'd won the 500 when the race hit, got the checkered flag. So he was a real promoter, and the scheme, because it was a toy company, we kind of copied, you know, toy ideas and put the lightning strike on it, and made a great combination. And of course, everything just went together perfectly.
Now, Mike, you would imagine that because everything came together perfectly, that both owner and driver would be thrilled about the sponsorship. But as you have learned and talked about, it wasn't necessarily both men that were eager.
No, and we talked about this, you and I, on the show a couple of times, and Al told me this several times. He said he did not want to be Johnny Lightning, flat out. He said he didn't want really anything to do with that sponsorship. And I thought about this after you and I talked about this the last time, I think in May. I was like, you know, I need to pull that clip so people can hear it. And it just actually, you know, sadly, we lost Parnelli, and it worked out that I was able to pull this clip out. But, you know, Al told me in a couple of different interviews I did with him, and he said, I did not want to be Johnny Lightning. I didn't want anything to do with it. I called them right away to say I didn't want to do it. So we actually have that clip tonight of Al saying, this was his initial reaction to the sponsorship news he got.
Well, I called Bill in Torrance, California one day. And I says, how's everything going, boss? He says, it's going good. He says, we got a new sponsor. I says, a new sponsor? I says, who is it, Bill? He says, Johnny Lightning. I says, Bill, don't make a joke out of me, please, honest. Really, I don't want to be Johnny Lightning. That sounds like a, you know, kid's toy. You know, he says, well, it is. It is a kid's toy. I said, oh, well, oh, man. I says, they just can't do this. And it turned out we got to Indianapolis, and here comes this car out. Well, we won Phoenix first, but here it was a different car. And it looked pretty. I says, well, one thing about it, it's pretty, you know. And I says, but I can't see Johnny Lightning, you know. And it turned out that Topper Toys and Johnny Lightning turned out to be a great sponsor. And they really, really did.
And Mike, the reality, it was pretty fast is what it was, right?
It was real pretty, and it was real pretty fast. That's no doubt about it.
It was both of those things. Just part of the legacy, the stories of Parnelli Jones. And we have more of them coming up that we'll play for you on Beyond the Bricks.
King C. Gillette knows you're dedicated to your barbershop routine. But what about after? What's your routine for facial care to avoid dry skin, itching, and beard rough? Well, the King C. Gillette Beard Oil is the perfect fit for making your beard feel as good as it looks. It softens your facial hair and moisturizes to help prevent itch due to dry skin. Get facial hair that feels as good as it looks. Just trim, wash, and soften with King C. Gillette.
This is Beyond the Bricks, brought to you by Quality Supply and Tool. Think outside the box. Store on 93.5 and 107.5 The Fan.
Al Unser, the 1970 Indy 500 champion, races the 1969 Indy winner Mario Andretti. They're racing Johnny Lightning cars on the Indy 500 set.
Zoomy. Fantastic.
Flashing through the curves, fighting it out on the straights. The Indy 500 means hours of fun and thrills for everyone. The Indy 500. Have a ball with cars and sets from Johnny Lightning.
Can I win?
Well, that commercial was pretty fun, Mike. Right?
It is pretty fun. We should get a Johnny Lightning 500 set and run it. That'd be pretty fun.
That would be pretty fun. Mike Thompson, Jake Query, Eddie Garrison putting it all together for us. Hope you folks are having a pretty fun time with us as we take a look back at Parnelli Jones, the life of greatness that was Parnelli Jones, who we lost in June this year at the age of 90. We were talking about the fact that Parnelli, of course, found the sponsorship for Johnny Lightning for Al Unser. And in 1970, Al Unser came to the Speedway, finishing first, third, and third in the first three races of the season. And the team not only had Al Unser behind the wheel, but they also had one of the guys that is really one of the true geniuses in terms of being outside of a race car, but setting them up, Mike. When you talk about success of that era, there are few that were better to have setting up your car than George Bignotti.
No, that's the guy you wanted. I mean, I think any team would have been thrilled to have George Bignotti. I mean, he won so many times. He won seven different 500s over his career. I mean, he won with Foyt in 61 and 64. He won with Graham Hill in 66. And then, obviously, he would win a couple times with Al in 70 and 71. I mean, when you say master mechanic, the guys who come to mind to me immediately are A.J. Watson and George Bignotti. I mean, it's just those two guys were just amazing.
Parnelli Jones on the improvements, if you will, with the 1970 Indianapolis 500.
Well, first of all, how we come about, we put together a team was George Bignotti and Al Unser. Al was driving for him, and Al wasn't too happy with that team. And so I always had a great respect for George Bignotti. I had driven a couple of midget races for him, and I always said that if I was going to go back to driving, that's who I'd like to have as a mechanic. Of course, we were able to put together, George Bignotti and Big Al and put the team together, and with a little bit of knowledge that we had already, we put together a car that was really awesome. And Al read 190 laps at the Indianapolis 500 that year and sat on the pole qualifying, and it was just a dominant race and one you just can't repeat, so to speak.
Of course, in terms of the domination, repeating, he's right. But it's not to say that Al Unser wouldn't do exactly that. But as for that 1970 Indianapolis 500, you heard Parnelli Jones say it. His driver, Al Unser, led 95% of the laps that year. That equates to 190 of the 200 possible. And in 1970, Al Unser got his first of what would become four Indianapolis 500 victories.
A handsome man from Albuquerque, the blue number two, and he got quite a hand up here. The crowd rose as one when he came by, and that's a great tribute to a great driver with a great car. And now here is Sid.
Al Unser, the checkered flag, the winner of the 1970 Indianapolis 500-mile race.
So that would mean that 7 years after taking the checkered flag himself as a driver, Parnelli Jones now was a winner of the Indianapolis 500, both as a driver and now as an owner.
Well, that was when you've driven yourself and you know the ins and outs of how people coordinate with each other and stuff like that. Like I said, I always thought the most of George Bignotti as a mechanic, and of course I didn't know too much about Al at the time because I was much closer to Bobby. And, of course, Bobby told me that Al wasn't real happy where he was at. So we, Al and I, put together that team together, and it just became an awesome combination.
So, Mike, what you have now is the combination of George Bignotti, Parnelli Jones, Al Unser, winning the 1970 Indianapolis 500 with that Johnny Lightning car in dominating fashion. And in some form, there was a repeat the next year. I don't mean in the domination, Mike, but the reality is the fact, as I had mentioned, that yes, Al Unser was able to go back-to-back in that car that Parnelli Jones and George Bignotti had put together for them. Quite the feat, Mike, to be able to win in 70 and 71.
Yeah, and sometimes Al would say, it wasn't as easy in 1971. He didn't dominate, quote unquote, as much as he did in 70, but it's hard to do that. I mean, how many guys have led 190 plus laps in the 500 in 1 year? It's not that many. You count them on one hand, basically. He led over 100 laps the next year as well, but it was definitely harder. I mean, Mark Donahue was a strong challenger in 71, and then he had a lot of challenge from Peter Revson in the McLaren in 71. But so it wasn't really as quote-unquote easy in 71, but another great car and another great year for Al and for Vel Spinelli-Jones Racing in 1971.
And this is how it sounded, the 1971 Indianapolis 500-mile race.
Blue car with a big number one, and he is number one. And now to call the winner for the 24th consecutive time is our chief announcer, the voice of the 500, Sid Collins.
And here is Pat Vidan waving the checkered flag for Al Unser, winner of the 1971 Indianapolis 500-mile race.
So you heard from Parnelli-Jones about being a car owner and a car driver who had won the Indianapolis 500. Now, Parnelli-Jones on being an owner who had won Indy back-to-back.
Well, it was really special to win back-to-back 500s, and you know, and of course, when we had the accommodation from the people from before, and we had basically the same knowledge in the car, and gained maybe a few little tricks here and there, and we were able to not sit on the pole and be as dominant as we were, but we were there at the end, and actually ran really well.
When we return, Parnelli-Jones has yet another driver that drives for him, and this time they do it more than just stateside. We'll take a look at that, and you'll hear from another legend when we return to Beyond the Bricks.
Another Don Clean with the Don Ducks.
Hello?
You should see this pan.
Stuck on grime?
The stuck-on-iest.
Migration, that'll be soaking for a long time.
Or will it?
She got Dawn Power Wash.
She got Dawn Power Wash. It removes up to 99% of grease and grime in half the time, with no water till rinsing.
Fluff my feathers, that was fast.
Oh, I'll crack you back. She's about to spray the microwave and the stovetop.
Best duck call ever.
Dawn Power Wash, the better grease getter.
What if you could have a career where the opportunities are as vast as our nation? Where it's not about mission statements, but a shared mission. At U.S. Customs and Border Protection, we go beyond to protect more than borders. From ship to shore, air to ground, cities to local communities, CBP agents and officers are keeping people safe. Join U.S. Customs and Border Protection and go beyond for something far greater than yourself. Learn more at cbp.gov/careers.
This is Beyond the Bricks, brought to you by Quality Supply and Tool. Think outside the box. Store on 93.5 and 107.5 The Fan.
Gee, guys, it's been a long time.
Look, lady, as soon as we finish lunch, we'll put your tires on.
Now, you want me to get a tummy ache?
Have a cigar.
That won't happen at Parnelli-Jones. We'll put your tires on in 55 minutes or less, or we'll balance them free.
At Parnelli-Jones, we feature a full line of Goodrich TA high-tech radios at great prices.
Parnelli-Jones, where you are just as important as your car.
Thanks, Parnelli. Tell me, don't your people ever eat?
Jake Query, Mike Thompson, Eddie Garrison putting it together for us. This is Beyond the Bricks. Thank you so much for those of you who have been kind enough to listen to us, not only on this evening on 93.5 and 107.5 The Fan in Indianapolis, but as I have learned in my traveling around with the NTT IndyCar series working for the radio network, many of you that listen to it on the way to work or home from work, whatever it might be, in podcast form, it is greatly appreciated. Talking tonight about the great Parnelli-Jones. Mike, we just heard the commercial there. Perhaps a lot of people may not realize that beyond his ability as a car owner, obvious ability as a driver, Parnelli-Jones was a very savvy businessman who made a lot of money on the West Coast by being a tire distributor, essentially retailer. I've still seen the bumper stickers. I got my stones from Parnelli-Jones, talking about Firestones, but pretty successful business empire that he had.
Absolutely. A very astute businessman, as you said. I mean, he had a number of Firestone tire distributor, tire centers, basically, where people could come in. And as you said, those were kind of the ubiquitous stickers. I got my stones from Parnelli-Jones. I mean, it was a big deal on the West Coast. And you know, Parnelli was a very, very astute businessman, was involved in a number of different things off of the racetrack that he was very good at what he did. There was no doubt about that.
In terms of his ownership in racing, we talked about Vels Parnelli Jones Racing winning the 500 twice, 1970 and 1971. They won the IndyCar Championship three times in a row, 1970, 71, and then again in 1972. The team had Al Unser, Joe Leonard, and Mario Andretti was dubbed the super team when he came on. That's what the team became known as. But in multiple interviews with Mike, Parnelli wanted to make sure that everyone knew it was the press that gave his team that nickname. Mike, he didn't want anybody to think he was bragging, right?
Well, it's funny because every time I ever interviewed Parnelli and I mentioned something about the super team, he would say to me, it was the press that gave us that name. We didn't call ourselves that. And he made it a point every time I interviewed him to say that. I think he wanted really wanted people to know that that was something that, hey, we didn't call ourselves the super team. Other people called us that because he didn't want it to come off as bragging or anything like that because they had tremendous success, obviously. I mean, as you just said, they won three championships in a row with Al and Joe Leonard and won the 500 twice in a row. And so they were called the super team. I mean, it was one of those things where you have Al Unser, Joe Leonard, and Mario Andretti. I mean, what else are you going to call those three guys? It's a pretty great team, So they were dubbed the super team in the press, but Parnelli in his interviews, he could be one of those guys where he wanted, as you said, he wanted the credit kind of spread around a little bit, and he didn't want it to come off as kind of bragging and like, hey, we self-gloss and, we gave ourselves this name. And he wanted to make sure that everyone knew that the press gave them the super team name and it wasn't him that did it.
Here is Parnelli Jones on the Joe Leonard, Al Unser, Mario Andretti super team.
We were tagged that, and you don't go around calling yourself the super team. But people were starting to call us that because we had some super team drivers, When you had Mario and Al and Joe Leonard, we had a good combination. Mostly Mario and Al being a little quicker than Joe in most cases. But Joe was steady Joe and won the championship in 1971. After Al had won in 71 and 72, or 72, he won the championship. And so we won the championship 3 years in a row. And because we could race them, but we just could not qualify them.
When Parnelli Jones passed away in June, I immediately thought to myself, just journalistically speaking, this is a giant amongst the world of racing and one of the pillars in terms of certainly the modern era of the Indianapolis 500-mile race. And I was trying to think of who would be a good person to interview about it and immediately reached out for Mario Andretti. Mike, I think I might have even asked your advice on who you thought would be good, and you said, well, Mario would be one of the best to talk to about it. And so I reached out and got a hold of Mario Andretti and had him on my afternoon show on 93.5 107.5 The Fan that Eddie Garrison also produces, known as Quarry & Company. But in that capacity, a couple of clips that we will hear here from recently of Mario Andretti talking about Parnelli Jones upon the passing of Parnelli Jones. And one of those things that I asked him about and Mario talked about was, in fact, driving for Parnelli Jones on that super team.
Well, what drew me was the fact that watching Al's performance and everything, you always knew that he would have top equipment. And then I had something to do with getting the services of Maurice Philippe, because I got to know him at Lotus, just a few years before when I drove sporadically for Lotus in Formula One. And so when he hired him, of course, we all know about the dihedral car and so on and so forth, the battles of that. And but then again, Joe Leonard won a championship that year. Al and I could not finish a race for some reason, but they called it a super team. That in itself was something of a compliment, if you will, and we enjoyed each other as teammates for sure, Al and Joe and myself. So, and the time together, here again, we just I could go so many different eras in our career, really, where we were together. I'm the one that always talking about Formula One and so on and so forth, and I talked to him and Val Milites to field the Formula One car, to have Maurice Philippe, you know, who's, you know, brilliant background there, to design a car, and we campaigned in 1975. And so you can see spending all that much time together was a lot of quality time, a lot of joys and pains and all of that to be shared. But again, you know, when I look back, it's, you know, I'm just so, you know, I've got my blessing for having had those opportunities to spend those times together.
Before New Cascade Platinum Plus, I would pre-rinse all my dishes because my old detergent just wouldn't get them clean. But now, I do dishes differently. A no pre-wash, no rewash, money-back guaranteed kind of different. Because Cascade Platinum Plus has double the grease-fighting power of Dawn built right in, with twice the scrubbing power, giving me a clean that lets me break all the dish rules. I just scrape, load, and I'm done. Yep, so clean. With Cascade Platinum Plus, I dare to dish differently.
It's interesting, Mike, because in that conversation, Mario discussed the fact that not only did Parnelli Jones in, you know, Vels Parnelli Jones Racing give him the opportunity to go to Formula One eventually full time, but that it was Parnelli really that kind of introduced him to the thought, made it possible for him to become a full time and eventually a world champion Formula One race car driver. I mean, all of that began really with that initial vision of those guys coming together.
Yeah, I mean, it was a very important step for Mario. He had run Formula One sporadically. You know, he had run, you know, the U.S. Grand Prix in 68, and he had run some kind of sporadic races, but he hadn't had the opportunity to really run full time, and that was one of his goals. He wanted to be the world champion. I mean, he had grown up, you know, admiring and idolizing the great Alberto Ascari. That was his racing hero, and he still lights up. If you ever talk to Mario Andretti and you get a chance to ask him about Alberto Ascari, he still lights up thinking about seeing the great Ascari, you know, and so he wanted to be that. He wanted to be a great, you know, world champion like Alberto Ascari, and this opened the door to get him eventually to Lotus and to be the 1978 world champion, which he was.
And while all of that was happening, and sure, Parnelli was still wearing the ownership hat, but Mike, he was also dabbling still in a little bit of racing and other such things to kind of keep his name, keep himself active out there, right?
Yeah, he did off-road racing. He did Trans Am. He was a great Trans Am driver. He did off-road, you know, with Big Ole, the famous Big Ole. You know, people will be familiar with that from his off-road racing, but he was also doing a little bit of acting, which I honestly didn't know that much about till I found this clip. We're going to have a little clip talking him with Kevin Calabro on the Sports Huddle, and he was talking about his acting career, and I was like, Parnelli had an acting career? And so I actually found out a little bit down the rabbit hole looking up Parnelli's acting career after I found this clip.
Jim Brown, you know, there are other, if you watch the Brady Bunch, Don Drysdale, all kinds of athletes were trying their hand in the era in acting. And as Mike had just mentioned, Kevin Calabro on Sports Huddle in 1981 found out Parnelli was one of them.
I saw you on a movie some weeks ago. Joe Don Baker was in it, and I'm sorry, but I don't remember the name of it. Are you doing any more acting?
Yeah, it was called Crash of the Checker. It was a film that was done in the Philippines. And I did a little part in it and was the actually MC in it.
You were the track announcer, I think.
Right.
So have you done any acting since then?
Well, no. As a matter of fact, I did a little part in a movie before that called Gone in 60 Seconds.
Mm-hmm.
And this film was Gone in 30.
Gone, yeah.
Well, you know, his acting career really didn't, you know, he wasn't in any kind of huge Hollywood movies, but he was in a movie with Joe Don Baker, who, if you happen to be a fan of the old show Mystery Science Theater, Mystery Science Theater once had a movie on called Mitchell that was starring Joe Don Baker.
That's one of the Mystery classics. Science Theater was where the aliens would sit and sarcastically critique films, correct?
Yes, they would. Correct. They would make fun of the movies. And one of their classic movies that they riffed on was a movie called Mitchell. and it starred Joe Don Baker. So when I'm cutting this clip and he said, I was in a movie with Joe Don Baker, I was like, well, great. You know, you're in a movie with Joe Don Baker, of all people, who is the star of Mitchell, who ended up on Mystery Science Theater.
It's beautiful, isn't it? Absolutely beautiful. By the way, Parnelli had, you know, a major influence, obviously, not only in the acting world, and I loved his humor there about that movie lasting just 30 seconds, essentially, but we're talking about somebody that touched so many race fans, people that covered the world of racing, people that went out and attended the Indianapolis 500, competed against Parnelli. I've had multiple drivers, as I'm sure you have as well, Mike, say that when they got into a car and they were racing and Parnelli was the guy next to them, they knew it was going to be a clean race. They knew it was going to be an honest race. It was not somebody that would put you in jeopardy, but you knew that you had to hit every mark because he was that good at all times. But he had that influence on those that worked the closest to him, including perhaps the most versatile accomplished race car driver of all time, talking about the aforementioned that we heard from, Mario Andretti. So without further ado, more from Mario Andretti on his overall thoughts on the man that was a competitor of his, an owner and boss of his, and obviously a friend of his. Mario Andretti on Parnelli Jones.
I can't believe it. At age 16, I already was aware of Parnelli Jones. I said that earlier. We were only in the country, Aldo and I, 1 year, and one of our cousins took us to a race in Trenton, New Jersey. It was a USAC race, and here we go, we're watching all the champions, and the one that stood out was Parnelli, because we thought he was Italian with the name Parnelli.
Right.
You know, we travel extensively during our life together, and whenever in Italy, I would try to teach Parnelli a few Italian words so he could fit right in, because many of my friends and other people thought that he had an Italian background because of that name. And anyway, it was that situation with us, you know, as you said earlier. It was a life that spanned, different eras of our lives, if you will, because it was the racing itself, what he did, and then growing up and then having the opportunity to be on the same track together with him when I broke into that level, behind him on my first year at Indy, my rookie year. You know, he finished second behind Jim Clark, and I was third, just behind Parnelli again. But there were stock car races and so on and so forth where we competed against one another. I learned so much from him. As I said this other times, that I had a special appreciation for him as a driver, how he really he had a finesse about his driving, and there was like this control aggression that was something that was almost impossible to imitate, but certainly something to appreciate. But again, overall, he fit every category imaginable in the best possible way for me in my life.
Mario Andretti talking about Parnelli Jones, who passed in early June, on this episode of Beyond the Bricks. That interview with Mario taking place actually the day after we had learned that we had lost Parnelli Jones. Mike, in the final minute here, I also want to mention, because he has been so helpful over the years in, for that matter, facilitating interviews or other interactions with Parnelli Jones, but I know how close he was to them, or to him, as well as how close he was to Bobby Unser and Robin Miller in particular. The public relations director now for Borg Warner, who has worked in various capacities around the world of racing, Steve Shunk, who defines what friendship means in the later years for those men and individuals. Certainly condolences continuing for Steve Shunk, because I know how dear those men were to Steve.
Absolutely. I mean, Steve has been so much a help to guys like Gordon Johncock, as you said, Bobby Unser, Parnelli, all these guys. He truly cares for these people. And it's an amazing thing what he's done for these guys. And you just can't say enough for what Steve has done. And Steve's a friend of mine. I've known Steve for a long time. And he's a friend of yours, Jake. And he's just, he really deserves all the credit he get, you know, we can give him for everything he's done for these guys.
Mike, it has been a privilege and an honor, for that matter, to be able to listen back and look back at the great life of Parnelli Jones on this, the first two installments of Beyond the Bricks. But the Brickyard 400, the 30th anniversary of it, is coming up this weekend. So as a result of that, we'll take our turn looking also at some of the great names in stock car that have run at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway for the rest of the week. Thanks for listening to Beyond the Bricks.